Sisters Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio this evening. I'm your host, Lisa Watson, and I hope you're settled in tonight because we have a special event show this evening, and I'm sure you'll love. My guest tonight is a board-certified family medical physician. She has practiced medicine and has directed medical research in her role as Worldwide Vice President for a leading healthcare company. She is the former chairman of the board of the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia. She is a past president of the Drug Information Association and has served on numerous university advisory boards. She grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, studied medicine in Detroit, practiced medicine in Philadelphia, and now splits her time between Longboat Key, Florida, East Hampton, New York, and New Zealand. This subject matter expert has parlayed her successful career in medicine into a second career as a New York Times and USA Today best-selling author. She writes medical thrillers and, among other things, that we'll touch on shortly. In fact, the highly acclaimed Dr. Laura Nelson is back in After the Fall, the final installment in the Laura Nelson series. I am very pleased to welcome this evening Patricia Gusson to the show. Welcome, Pat.
Well, thank you very much, Lisa. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, I am happy you're here, too. You've had such an illustrious career as a medical doctor and a director of medical research. Can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself and what prompted you to journey into writing thrillers?
Well, I did have a long career in medicine and medical research, and all throughout those years, I was also a mother, and I started in medical school with two small children, and I ended up at the end of my career with seven children. So I had a very busy family life, and I had a really, really busy professional life. And so for me, it was all about balancing family and my profession. But after several, many years of doing this, in my last position, I had a lot of international travel. And for the first time ever, I had a chance to really think about everything that had happened in my life. And I always went back in my mind to the earliest days of my professional career, which was medical school for me. And I was a medical student in Detroit in the late 1960s, which was a very problematic time in terms of the city of Detroit and the riots that happened there, and in terms of what was happening in the country, the years of the Vietnam War, the years of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy. So it was a very troubling time. So it was really time when I finally had time to go back and reflect upon those times. And for me personally, it was just a highly influential time in my life. So that's really what got me started. I thought I should really go back and revisit those times. One more little point, and then I thought I really don't like to read nonfiction. I like fiction, and I like thrillers, and I like mysteries. So if I'm gonna write about this, I'm gonna put it in a thriller format. So that's what got me.
Yeah,
started.
Because I suspect that during the course of a day, you probably have your fair share of nonfiction.
That's correct, and I'd like to leave that behind and go into a new world.
That is great. Now, After the Fall is the last book in your Laura Nelson series. Your first novel, Shadow of Death, introduces readers to Laura when she is a medical student in Detroit during the riots in 1967. And like you said, the social upheaval of the time clearly impacted your character in a very personal and traumatic way. Would you give listeners some background on the series and Laura's journey from the first novel to the most recent?
Sure, I'd love to do that. Well, when Laura Nelson starts out in Shadow of Death, she is a young medical student. She has a three-year-old son, and she has a three-month-old baby. And
wow.
She's starting out, and right at the, and she's located right there in the urban Detroit, right at the epicenter of the riots there. So she's a young mother, starting out on a very aggressive career path. She's a dedicated student, but she's also a little bit naive about life. She came from a smaller town, and now she's transplanted into urban Detroit in chaos with the army there trying to get it under control. So what happens is that she becomes very personally impacted by the riots. And what happens is that her very first patient that she sees in the hospital is a riot victim. And
wow.
For circumstances, you know, that happen after that is that she becomes a target for violence. And she's actually targeted, and it's all tied into the violence going on in Detroit. And she makes some very bad choices and
mm-hmm.
has very dire consequences to them. So the story here is, as a young woman, mother, going through medical school under very, very tense conditions. And that takes her, because we know we have three more books, we know that she physically survived that
mm-hmm.
time period. And what happens after that is that book ends, it's done, finished, and then in the next book, what I've done is fast forwarded her life 7 years from when she graduated from medical school. So there's a 7-year gap. Now,
right.
Everything in her life is different. She's a very successful thoracic surgeon in Tampa. Her husband, who was a social worker in Shadow of Death, is now a TV news anchor with a lot
wow.
of notoriety. So, and her kids are older. She has
mm-hmm.
five children at this point. And she's got, everything's going well with her, a good life, and so forth, until here a real personal tragedy attacks on a very close to home in a very personal way. She's involved in a murder. She must find the real murderer, or she's going to lose her family and her career and everything. And
She's got a lot at stake here.
She has an awful lot at stake in this one, and it's very personal and close to home. It's not a global threat. It's something. It's just a very personal threat, and she needs to deal with that. And then after that story ends, and then. 7 years later, we advance her life 7 years later, real time, not that, but in her life, is,
mm-hmm.
she's now 7 years older. She's still in Tampa. Her children, who were very, very small, infants in Shadow of Death, they're elementary school kids in Shadow of Death. Now they're
mm-hmm.
high school going on college
right.
kids in my third book, which is Weapon of Choice. And here now, Laura is the chief of surgery in Tampa. So she has a very successful career. Her children are growing up quite well. And this is 1985 in the Weapon of Choice. And 1985 is the year that the HIV/AIDS started
mm-hmm.
making its way into the smaller cities and into the medium cities. We'll call Tampa a medium city. And
right.
She is faced with the first case of AIDS in the Tampa hospital there, and no one knows what to do. If you take yourself back to 1985, no one knew anything about the AIDS virus, so everybody was
right.
In
this is like
panic. No one knew what to do. So in the middle of that, there is a there there is a medium-sized act of bioterrorism in her surgical lab in terms of infecting the patients in her, not her lab, in her ICU. Someone going around sort of like the angel of death and infecting patients with a very drug-resistant staph bacteria. So she's got the bacteria, she's got the AIDS in the background, and as it turns out, her daughter is also infected by this antibiotic-resistant staph. And
wow.
So here Laura is really in the middle of having to save save her hospital from this aggressive act of bioterrorism, and also try to be with her daughter. And I think it's probably any professional woman's worst nightmare, is that the job is so conflicting with what she needs to be as a mother. And in the meantime, this ties in with a hate crime that is on a massive scale that's happening with a very malicious, malevolent, we'll say a psychopathic CDC worker in Atlanta. So these two things come together. The smaller bioterrorism in her own ICU and the impending mass bioterrorism in Atlanta. So that is the crux of that story. But we know there's another book, so
she survived.
She survived. And now we take her 7 years later. And so it was now 1992. And by now, she has become a world expert in lung transplant surgery. And she has become the principal investigator in a big trial testing a really wonderful new drug to prevent rejection in transplant patients. And so in the course of this, she is asked to go to the FDA to present the data, which she does. Now, she's a Tampa girl, and she goes up to the FDA, and it's she makes her presentation in the Rockville area, Rockville, Maryland, and she goes to Philadelphia, where the company is located, and they have a very nice celebratory dinner because the presentation went very well. And the next morning, she gets in the car to go to the airport, to go back to Tampa, and she slips on the ice, has a really terrible fall, fractures her hand and her wrist, and also has a slight concussion, but really the damage is to her hand and her wrist, and it's very severe. And as soon as she recovers from her concussion and the surgery that had to be done immediately, she realizes that she cannot operate anymore. Her career, as far as a surgeon, is over. And so she needs to face that. But her entree into the drug testing area, the company had been trying to recruit her as their vice president of research because their former vice president was retiring. So she, of course, rejected that out of hand because she's a surgeon. But now that she is, she just can't operate anymore, she takes that job.
Right.
And it's now her job to see that medication through the FDA process. And she is doing that, and she knows that drug very well. But there's a very malicious, psychopathic, actually, FDA staffer that does not want that drug approved. And he is going to go to any length to stop that drug from being approved for totally undrug-related reasons, for his own personal reasons. And he's already killed two people, including her predecessor, to make to stop the approval of the drug. So that sets up the after the fall. So it's, you know, it's after the fall in terms of a very physical fall where she really had to terminate her professional life.
She has some serious decisions to make, right.
Right, right. And in the meantime, her children, who were, of course, very small earlier, have grown up. A couple of her daughters are medical residents. They're pretty much off on their own. And it turns out that most of them have ended up in the Philadelphia area, too. So she decides to, she terminates her career in Tampa, moves up to Philadelphia, and has to face the threats that are now all over her because of this FDA character. And, you know, she has to learn the drug development industry, too.
Right. Now, before we go too far, I'd like to let our listeners know that the live chat session is open, and you're welcome to comment or ask questions there. You can also call us at area code 646-200-4071. And after the live show, we do post the podcast and recap blog to readersentertainment.com. And if there are listeners out there that would like to check out Pat's website during the show, you can find her at www.patriciagusson.com. And so, Patricia, our next question is, one of the questions tonight from a listener was that the FDA process for approving drugs seems pretty complex. And she wondered how you did the research for that or if you had experience with it yourself.
Well, in this particular book, in After the Fall, I am very fortunate because I do know that process backwards and forward. I was the medical director and director of research for a large pharmaceutical company, Johnson & Johnson Company. So that was my job. It was my job to get these drugs tested and through the FDA. So I do know that area quite well, and it is a very complex area. There are not too many people who really understand what goes on behind the closed doors of a pharmaceutical company developing a drug, because there has to be so much secrecy. There are about trade secrets, and then of course the interaction with the FDA, which is always a bit difficult, because the company wants the drug approved. The FDA wants to be absolutely sure that this drug is safe and effective, and it's a very involved and complicated process. But I did not have to research that. What I did have to research in After the Fall, the most difficult part for me in the research area, was I had there is a character in this book, and she is a very bright Iraqi scientist who was involved with the really early discovery of the drug back when she was a student at University of Michigan. And then she went to work for a small company that took it on. And then, of course, the big company bought the small company. So there's a lot of money involved for her when this drug is finally approved. And this has to do with our FDA staffer. Because when she gets the money, she will leave and go back to Iraq, and he will lose her, and he does not want to lose her. So I had to do a lot of research on Iraq in 1992, and that was after the first Desert Storm, but before the next Iraqi war. So there was a lot of, you know, I've never been to Iraq. I've been to many other places, but I had never been to Iraq. So I really had to do a lot of research there, because it was back and forth with her family, who was actually involved in weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Right. Now, Pat, one listener touches on how she felt reading the scene where Laura finds out that her hand can't be fixed well enough for her to ever do surgery again. She describes that moment as actually heart-wrenching. She wondered if you found it emotionally challenging to write that scene since you're a doctor.
Yes, I did. This was just a total blow to her career, and she'd worked so hard and gone through so much to make it to where she was a very renowned, well-respected surgeon, and then just to have that disappear immediately. So,
right, and just a freak accident, no less.
Just a freak accident, right. And she has a lot of support at that point. Her children are supportive. She has a love interest who has sort of been, you know, wooing her for quite some time, and he is extremely supportive, so she does have a lot of support. But it was very difficult to write that scene. But for anyone who has read my book, it's not in this series, but it's called And Then There Was One, that was actually the toughest scene for me ever to write. But, you know, that's, we'll get to that.
Right. Now, another reader thought that the villain in After the Fall was really good in that you almost feel sorry for him. If he found another way than murder to save the woman he loved, she thought he would actually be a hero. So, Pat, what came to mind when you were constructing that character?
Well, what came to mind was really the concept of the neighbor next door. The neighbor next door, you just don't know. Could that neighbor, who just looks perfect on the surface, be a psychopath? You really don't know. They are out there. And this this villain was very much in love with this young doctor and would do anything to keep her. And it really didn't faze him that much that he had to kill a couple of people. It didn't really bother him that much. He was just, you know, he had a very strong skill set in terms of means because he's a former Marine. He knows how to eliminate people, but he's been living a pretty much everyday life as an FDA staffer. But no, when it comes to what he really wants, it doesn't even faze him that he's killing people and ruining lives. So, you know, you can say, yes, I mean, there are two great male lovers, we'll say, in this book. And one is the villain, and he's doing all these bad things because he loves a woman. And the other is Laura's love interest, Tim Robinson, who is finally getting it together. So,
right.
You really have that. Some readers have pointed out to me, well, you have these two men, very strong love interest men, and they're just totally different people. One is just, Tim is just a fabulous person, and our bad guy is, on the surface, normal, but a really dangerous psychopath.
Right.
And
now,
you know, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say that if you're writing thrillers, you know, you have to keep in mind the five big motivators for the action in thrillers. And, you know, one is sex, one is greed, one is fear, one is power, and one is revenge. And this motivator is sex.
Right. Now, we're going to switch gears a little bit because we're getting low on time, and I want listeners to know a little bit about you. I see from your website that you and your husband, Dr. Robert Gusson, a renowned medical researcher, divide your time between Longboat Key, Florida, East Hampton, and vineyards in New Zealand. And I've seen pictures, and I tell you, they were just, like I said before we started the interview, they are just breathtaking. Can you tell us a little bit more about the vineyards, Pat, and how you and your husband became owners of a winery?
Well, we sort of fell into that one, and in terms of my husband was the chief scientific officer of Johnson & Johnson for a lot of years, and he had a laboratory in Australia, so he used to go over there a lot, but he had never visited New Zealand. So when we did take the opportunity to travel over there, we fell in love with New Zealand, and the wine industry there is just amazing. It's just so beautiful, overwhelming. The people are great. So we thought that it would be a very interesting diversion to get involved with wineries. So we have a couple of them, and we grow Sauvignon Blanc grapes and Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And we sell all of our all of the grapes go into the wines of Villa Maria Estates, which is a really fine, wonderful New Zealand winery. So it's been a lot of fun, very different, and we've learned a lot.
Now, you and your husband also co-authored a book a few years ago entitled What's Next for You? The Gusson Guide to Big Changes, Big Decisions, and Big Fun. That title is incredible, by the way. So can you tell us about your joint venture, and was this a labor of love, completely autobiographical for you two?
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with it, and yes, it is totally autobiographical. This is our attempt at nonfiction, although we hope that it's very humorous. It's written in a he said, she said alternating mm-hmm. chapter, so we get definitely both our points of view. But what happened was that after we did go from medicine into writing and into the wine, everybody kept asking us, how did you do that? Did you plan that? And we used to get asked to do a lot of talks and so forth, talk to different groups, and we just didn't have time to do that. So we said, well, let's just put it in a book. So that's what we did. And our really theme there is, no, we didn't plan any of this. It just happened. And we subscribe to this mantra of thoughtful impulsiveness. If you want to do it, and if the worst-case scenario is okay and you can handle it, then just why not? Go ahead and do it. So we just jumped into these things.
Now, I have to ask the next question. I ask it every show. Mostly besides coffee and chocolate, the answers vary. So, Pat, when you're writing, name one thing you have to have and why.
Well, the one thing I have to have is I have to have background noise. I cannot write without background noise. I mean, I grew up a mother of seven kids. I now have, you know, lots of grandchildren. Everything I did was with the background of noise, chatter, TVs on, music, everything. So I just have something in the background going all the time. I don't care if it's a busy place or whatever. If I'm alone, I'll make sure the television's running or the music is on. So.
Now, tell listeners a little bit about your next project.
Well, my next project, as you know, this After the Fall is the fourth and the last of the Laura Nelson series, because all the loose ends are tied up here. But I've always wanted to do a book about international parental abduction. I just think that's so interesting when a parent takes off with a child. And so that's where I'm going. And the parent that lives with the child is going to be an Egyptian national. So he will be going into Egypt just before and at the time of the Arab Spring. So I hope to bring a lot of that background in there. And it turns out I was in Egypt just before that, a matter of days. So I really have a good feel for that, and I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to bring back one of Laura Nelson's daughters to be the mother, because she would be in exactly the right age group, and Laura has twin daughters and they're both doctors, so that's what I'm planning on doing.
Wow. Now, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to let people know how to find you online.
Well, I have my website, which is www.patriciagusson.com. But I'm also very active on Facebook. I just love interacting on Facebook. And there it is, you know, the usual www.facebook.com. And it's Patricia Dot Gusson. But I think if you just go looking for Patricia Gusson on Facebook, you'll find me.
I can't believe the time flew so fast. I mean, we'll definitely have you on
really
again, because I certainly didn't get to a couple of the questions that we had tonight. So I would like to definitely thank you for being our guest tonight. It was such a great pleasure speaking with you, Pat.
Well, I thank you, Lisa. You are an incredible interviewer.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And I'd like to thank our listeners here at Readers Entertainment Radio. And don't forget to find us online at readersentertainment.com. You can stop by. You can leave a comment about tonight's show. We'd love to hear from you. I am your host, Lisa Watson, saying be happy and be inspired. Good night, Patricia.
Good night. www.cosproductions.com.